Good morning. We are learning Melachim Aleph. We are in the third chapter. We are up to Pasuk Hey. We were discussing, as we're now in the second week, learning this chapter, the very famous incident, which we'll hopefully come across at the end of this parak, again on page 32, which discussed the beginning of Shlomo's reign as the new king, which really was the previous chapter, discussing all the different things that he did. One, the unusual thing which we spoke at great length last week about was who he chose to marry, namely the daughter of Paro, and what was the motivation for that, whether it was halachically permissible. These are things that we were discussing last week. Now we're going to continue with the second part.
What did we finally...
I'd like to hear the conclusion.
Yeah, I remember we can't get any conclusions on all this. So for me, he heard all those proportions.
Well, there are those that say that she converted. Okay. So therefore, it wasn't such an issue. The question also was whether or not you're allowed to marry an Egyptian. The Torah does say you could after the third generation, and of course this was the first, that you can't convert someone who's Egyptian and marry them, but their grandchildren, you could marry such a person. However, similar to Ruth and Boaz, the way that Boaz interpreted the sentence about not marrying a Moabite was he felt that was only referring to a Jewish woman marrying a Moabite man. But Moavi v'lo Moavit, that a Jewish man, such as Boaz, would be allowed to marry Ruth. And that's what perhaps Shlomo interpreted as well when it came to the laws of marrying an Egyptian. That perhaps the whole prohibition is only when it comes to marrying an Egyptian male, that you have to wait till the third generation. However, when it comes to an Egyptian woman, it's permissible. Of course, there were also other political reasons why he married her. In order to have an alliance and connection to the Egyptian king, and as well as being able to have more of a guarantee of continuing his dynasty, of continuing his remaining as a king.
Was she his first wife?
Well, the other interesting point is, as we're going to see shortly in Pasuk Ches, is that he was not a very, very old man at the time. In fact, some say he was only 12.
He was 3 years later.
Maybe 3 years later, maybe he was 15. So it's not very clear up until this point who he was married to. It doesn't really talk about much about who he was married to. It doesn't say anything at all. This is only this first chapter, which discusses his marriage. Before that, it just talked about what he was doing to clean up the mess of his father, if I could say it that way. So it's not very clear. We certainly know at the end of the day, he will have more than one wife. He'll have many, many wives, above and beyond the prescribed cap of 18. And we'll discuss that when we get to it. But
just browsing through this quickly, it appears that most of the portion feel it was not halachically correct. However, the Kli Yakar says that he may have erred in his interpretation of halacha, which is basically
right.
But he's like the only one. This could be a pretty, from what I'm looking through this very, overview, it appears that it was not the thing to do, especially whenever you're...
One of the points which was mentioned, I don't remember by whom, the fact is we do not find anywhere in the text that he's punished for this action, which leads to the conclusion that perhaps what he did was either not wrong, or the fact if he did make a mistake, it was a legitimate enough mistake that he's not held accountable for having made such a mistake.
Here it says here in one of the English, it says Gabriel threw a rock, and the rock got mud on it, and eventually became
Rome.
That destroyed the temple.
Rome was built in a day. Correct.
He was punished greatly. Look what happened to his
children. Ultimately, we'll see. Right.
Avot chatur shenei banim tefen.
Right.
He also built ashamed for this, for his wife.
He was. Of course, well, you know, he's 31. Please, if you look at that. It says that the marriage provoked God's anger, as described by the prophet Jeremiah.
It's just at this particular point, we don't find an immediate response to this act. We don't find that Hashem is offended by it. On the contrary, he's going to be given, as we'll see shortly, plus okay, a tremendous gift, as though he did something courageous. The question, obviously, is why he would deserve whatever he's going to be getting. We'll discuss that shortly. Okay? All right, so let's...
Begin. Are you
going to meet him next week? No.
There's no
present. No. Pasukei. Begivon near Hashem el Shlomo b'chalom halayla. So Shlomo had a vision. He had a connection to Hashem. In Givon, it was through the means of a dream, on top of page 32, at night. V'yom elokim shoma atanoch. And God said, what would you like, whatever you want? It's almost like rubbing the lantern, right? And the genie pops out. Giving one wish. Anything you want. Anything you can think of.
Was he living in Gibeon then?
No. He was in the capital, as the king. I'm not sure why it mentions that particular place, except that he was bringing sacrifices in the previous pasuk in Givon, which, as we saw in Rashi in the previous page, the very bottom of page 30, said that that's where the mizbeach was, or that's where people brought sacrifices as it went from one place to the next. Ultimately, it's in Givon until the Beis Hamikdash, the temple, is built. He brought the previous verse speaks about the numerous sacrifices that he brought. So he stayed there, and perhaps as he connected to Hashem in such a way, by bringing all these offerings and giving of himself in that way, for that reason Hashem approaches him and says, whatever you would like, whatever you want, you can be granted. So, again, on a simple reading, it makes sense as to the previous pasuk, the reason why he deserved this, is because of his offerings that he brought. That's brought down as well in the Medrash Mishle, which is not in front of us. It says that Shlomo, I exactly know the source of this, Shlomo sat and fast. He had a fast for 40 days, which of course means in a day, and then he would eat that night. And he did this because he was longing for Hashem's wisdom. And this was a way for him to be able to ask Hashem to have knowledge by disconnecting himself from the physical world, hoping to connect himself to something spiritual, intellectual.
Except politically, the wise things that he did, because if he sits in Yerushalayim in the palace, he doesn't see the people, and the people don't see him.
This is a way to make his rounds and to work the room and to get people to like him. Okay. So this was the question. And of course, if we were ever asked that question, maybe we would come up with all these very elaborate answers, perhaps a country, some nice homes. Maybe that's the reason why we'll never be asked such a question. So Hashem asks Shlomo this question, expecting a much more mature response. For Yomer Shlomo, Atah Sisa im Avdecha David Avi Chesed Gadol. He doesn't just immediately jump into his request. Similar to the Shemona Esrei, we don't just immediately ask for things. The first three paragraphs of the Amidah is us acknowledging the greatness that Hashem is. And similarly, Shlomo acknowledges all the kindness, the chesed gadol, the abundant, the great level of kindness that you, God, have done for my father. Kasher holach lefanecha, as my father was a good person, he walked before you, be'emes, with truth, with tzedakah, v'yishas leva, v'imach. He was a very straight person. He was a very charitable, a very kind person. But you, God, provided a tremendous chesed, tremendous kindness on behalf of my father. V'tishmerlo, and you protected him. It's a chesed gadol hazeh, a tremendous kindness that you did. V'titen lo bein, yoshiv al kiso kayom hazeh. And ultimately, not only did you protect him, but you also allowed his son, namely me, to become the next king sitting in his throne. So what was this chesed gadol? What is this great kindness? The Masudas David says over here in Pasuk Vav, which is the fourth line, Masudas David says, the chesed gadol is lahamlicho biyosa roetzon. We have to remember David's humble beginnings. David was not a powerful person. He was a lowly shepherd, which of course is the profession which most of the Jewish leaders become, as we discussed in Parsha Shemos, because it shows the sensitivity of caring for others, other things, and that's what a leader should be. A leader is someone who cares for the people that they're watching. And therefore, this is the chesed gadol, says Masudas David. My father, in fact, when the question was who would be the next king, all of his siblings were brought, and everyone thought that maybe it would be this sibling, that sibling, and David, they just left in the field. They didn't think in a million years he would be the candidate. But instead, he was the one that was chosen. So he went literally from rags to riches, so to speak, to become the king, which is a chesed gadol, a tremendous thing that you appointed him as the leader. Perhaps such a person is also more appreciative, or someone's more of a people person, because of the place that David originated from, because of his humble beginnings. But nonetheless, this is a chesed gadol. So therefore, as the English actually says on page 33, there's three things that are being acknowledged by Shlomo. He said, first of all, you took my father from being a shepherd and now made him a king. And the second thing is, even though he was attacked and there was rebellion, constantly being rebelled against upon, nonetheless, he always remained the king. And the third thing is he granted my father a son, namely myself, to carry on the family dynasty. So these are the three things that Shlomo alludes to in the sentence that we just read. Pasuk Zayin. V'ata now, Hashem Elokai, ata himlach das avdecha tachas David avi. You have allowed myself to be the next king underneath my father after taking his position. Vanochi nar katon. I am a nar katon. I'm a little kid. I'm a baby. I'm running the show and I'm this little kid. Lo eida seis vavo, which I think the way it's translated is, I don't know if I'm coming or going. I don't know what I'm doing over here. I'm a little kid and was given such position of power at such a young age. How young was he? We're not going to see this whole Rashi, but Rashi does say in Pasuk Zayin, Nar Katon is Ben Shtem Esri Shana Hoya, at the time at least that he was appointed as the king. It's talking about he was 12 years old. And it says Vizel El Cheshvan, this is the whole calculation. We're not going to go through this whole long Rashi, but suffice it to say, he was young, to the point that he calls himself a nar katan. He wasn't even bar mitzvah yet. He didn't even get his tefillin. Yeah.
Does that mean that's why he married an isha mitzvah? Because he didn't know better? Is that an excuse for doing what he did?
Ignorance is never an excuse.
But in this case,
yeah.
Yeah.
But doesn't the king
right.
Right. Get him the bride, and he didn't go to Egypt and say, hi, I want to marry you. I mean, that's a diplomatic.
Right, it seems like he was not just some...
He wasn't, I mean, it's not something that he does by himself.
Right, right.
And I fell in love with her, you know?
Presumably, right. So it's not so...
It's probably a negotiation.
Right, but they also have their all ulterior motives for him to be the married to the king's daughter. But this is what he says. Even though he's a powerful king, he admits to his flaws, the fact that he has so much to learn. I'm young, and I have so much. I have so many things that I really don't know. I don't know how to be an effective leader. And if you're asking me, you're offering me some type of gift, this is the gift. Pasuches, v'avdecha b'seich amcha asher b'charta. Your servants who are among your nation which you have chosen, Am Rav. The Jewish people, there's such a huge, huge group of people that I have to be a king over. You know how big they are? They're so large you can't even count them. They're so numerous. So some people explain, what do you mean? Jewish people are not so numerous. There's, you know, we're less than, much less than 1% of the population now. And what do you mean we're so large? So some say, to answer, whenever we find that numerous times throughout the Torah, it doesn't necessarily refer to quantity, but to quality. So that each Jew, they say that Jewish people are comparable to the stars. But it doesn't mean necessarily that we're infinite, but it means that we have the capacity to reach that level. We have no roof. There's nothing that can stop us from our potential and our growth. And therefore he's saying that when it comes to being in charge of a bunch of Jews, it's not so easy, right? It's a lot of work, because every one of them is a world unto themselves. And they have so many, they're so great, each one of them. What?
Everybody's present.
Yeah, you know.
It's interesting, because Hashem is saying, what can I give you? And he's really not asking for anything specific. He's just like...
Right, he's kind of just trying to develop what he's saying, and maybe he's trying to understand what is best for him. But Osata la'avdecha leiv shaymeya. Very interesting language over here. That you should give me a heart that's able to truly listen. Lishbait es amcha, to judge the nation. L'havin bein tov v'ra, should be able to know the difference between what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's bad. Ki mi yochal lishpot es amcha hakabed hazeh. Who am I, and who possibly could stand here and judge such a nation, which is such a heavy nation, or as the Radak calls it, harav. Again, there's so many people that are approaching, or will approach me and ask me questions. And how am I supposed to know and answer all these questions? It's very stressful. And therefore, what he asks for is not just the intellect, but he also asks for the lev shemeya. The lev shemeya is to have the heart, to have this some instinct as well as the intellect, that there's the mind and the heart are interconnected. So it's not just that I know stuff, but that I'm able to actually be receptive, I can listen. It's not just sometimes you have a judge or someone, they don't want to hear what you have to say. They already know what the answer is, even though I didn't hear what your point is. First, you need to hear the other person's perspective. You have to have an open ear to understand. And once you truly understand the person's point of view, then you can share your thoughts.
Was it expected that he would know all of halakha and be able to resolve questions? And the reason I'm asking this is because we go back to Moshe,
right,
and Yitro, and what he told him to do, and it was kaved for him, he couldn't really handle it all, right? He went to the elders. So
right.
Here you have the Sanhedrin who's supposed to be able to get. Was there no kind of hierarchy here that, you know, went down?
So if you look in the English on page 33, the bottom left, it says, although there was a functioning court system led by the Sanhedrin, Jewish kings were called upon to render judgment, either because kings like David and Shlomo were great scholars in their own right, or because of their royal authority, especially in cases that did not lend themselves to ordinary rules of evidence. So Shlomo gave priority to this awesome responsibility. So there certainly was something in already set up. It was certainly a Sanhedrin. There was certainly judicial systems, a court. But still, questions would be approached. You would be approached constantly. It may not necessarily be halakhic questions always. It could be, should we go to war? What do we do?
I
mean, these are like, wow. You know?
But halakhically, when he said that he may have erred when he married a Jewish princess. So
right.
I wonder then if he would constantly be all and end all of answering these questions.
We did mention when it came to that marriage, he only married her after his Rebbe died. Or I should say more specifically, after he killed his Rebbe. Right? But and because he didn't have a teacher to guide him, so he may have made, that's why he made the mistake.
Was the Sanhedrin was there?
I sinned, I couldn't help him. My teacher died. I killed him.
His father's an orphan.
That's right, yeah.
So that's what, that was the previous chapter, yeah.
They didn't approve this.
We don't find that. Oh, that they did the son. Right. Yeah, the Sanhedrin felt that conversion in general should have been avoided because the Jewish people were such powerhouses. that maybe people were not converting for the right reasons. They weren't authentic and genuine in their conversion. We look at Rashi. Rashi tells us in Pasuk Tes, as Amcha Kaved, Rashi, toward the very bottom, Mitoch Shehim Rabin, because there are so many of them, Yeshulhem Oiskim Rabin, they have so many different things in which they're going to involve me in. Uvoyim Wadin, they're going to go to court. The Ainli Maton Ayin Bedinam. He doesn't say that he won't be able to understand the answers, but he just doesn't have the time, right? It's going to be so time-consuming because he has so many other things to do. So that's the problem. If you want to learn Rashi a little bit differently, even if, let's say, the Jewish people are less in number, but maybe the amount of questions that they're going to have is going to be great. Right? Not necessarily just because you have a huge amount of people, that doesn't mean they're all going to be bombarding you with questions. Perhaps
the variety of the questions.
Right, it's going to be very much mixed up. All these different things that are going to be approached, and I'm going to need to know how to respond to all of them. And therefore, it's not just my intellect, but I need also a heart to know how to listen, to be able to decipher, and to really distinguish between what's good and what's not good, that which is correct, that which is not correct. We then continue in Pasuk Yud Aleph. But Yom Elokim Elov, so Hashem hears this and says, Yan, Asher Shu'altes Adamar Zeh. I'm very impressed. The fact that you said that this is what you want, V'Sha'altelocha Yomim Rabin, person would rather maybe bathe in the fountain of youth and have a long life, V'Sha'altelocha Oisher, you didn't ask for wealth, V'Sha'altel Nefesh Avecha, you didn't ask that you should be spared from your enemies, you should be able to avenge your enemies, you should conquer over them. Didn't ask any of those things. I'm impressed that the thing that you asked is to be able to be havin lishpoit mishpat, to be able to truly understand and to know how to be a good judge and to be able to be a good listener and to be able to have the capacity to think properly. So it's brought down actually in a Medrash Tanchuma. It says that if we would want to compare this at all to a mashal, to a parable, so that you would be approached by the king, and the king would say, you can have anything you want, whatever you want, you can have. So the person thinks, well, I can have a palace, I can have a home, I can have a nice house, a yacht, a fancy car, I can have all these different things. He says, you know what I want? I want to marry your daughter. So what was the motivation of doing that? So once you already are in with the king, that which is most precious to the king, then everything else will also come about afterwards too. Similarly, Shlomo realized the most precious thing that God acknowledges, that the most important thing, is Torah wisdom, is knowledge. And therefore, if a person is able to acquire that, then everything also will follow along thereafter. And therefore, this is what he says in Pasuk Yud Beis. Hine asi sikravach, when you do exactly as you wish, I will grant your request. Hine nasati l'cha lev chachma navoin, I'm going to give you a heart of wisdom, not a brain of wisdom, but a heart of knowledge, the navon, and as well as a level of understanding. We'll see what the difference between the two is in a second in the daf. Let's just finish the Pasuk. Asher kamochu lo hoi l'fanecha, there will be no one like you before, and no one will ever be like you. It means it sounds like God is saying you will be the smartest person who ever walks the face of this earth. So if you look on the previous page, we'll see, maybe that's not necessarily the case, we'll see that shortly.
It's wise.
Wise.
There's a difference between wise and smart.
Right, absolutely.
You could be book smart and have no common sense.
Right.
Insight.
Right, and I think that's kind of what the Radak is going to say over here on the previous page, on page 32, at the very bottom, when it says, Lev Chochem Anavon. Omer Razal, the second last line on the bottom. The Radak says, quoting the words of our rabbis, Chochem, what is a Chochem? This also, he quotes this in English. Hamakayim es Limudo. Someone who is able to fulfill that which they learn. which is translated in English as one who has retention of knowledge. So it's not just that you have knowledge, but you know how to apply that knowledge to the real world. Kloimar, as to say, Kimashalaman Mukuim Belibo Mzumim, that you're able to internalize all the learning you had so that you'll be able to put that learning into practice. As you said, just the fact that you have book smart doesn't mean that you are able to be a good judge. You may not know how to apply your knowledge to that. And that's how the Radak concludes. And Navon, which is translated as someone who's understanding, is Maven Davar Mitoch Davar. Not necessarily everything that you're going to learn is going to present itself in an actual case. And that, of course, this is how American law is based. You have a precedent which is set. And based on that, we try to see a connection between that which was before to something which is in front of us now. And similarly, the greatness of Shlomo is not necessarily that he was zapped with all this wisdom and now he'll know exactly what to do in every situation, but he'll be able to decipher and infer, based on the knowledge that he has, the proper decisions, whatever he'd be confronted with. To the point that there was no one greater than him, ever. And on this, the Radak says, one second, how about Moshe Rabbeinu? Shlomo may be a smart 12-year-old kid, right? But let's not compare it to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Radak says, yeah. A feel of Moshe Rabbeinu on page 34 at the very top. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, however, that's b'chachmas hateva, wuhoye kamohu. When it comes to the chachmas hateva, the wisdom of the natural world, as it says on the bottom of the English, that is how Shlomo will be even greater than Moshe. Avo b'chachmas elkus, when it comes to, as it's translated, divine wisdom, the wisdom, knowledge of God, that's Hayachachem Yosim Imenu. Moshe went to Har Sinai. He received the Torah from Hashem. That Shlomo was not able to be greater than that. But his Chachmos HaTeva, just nature of understanding the way the world worked, that he could tap into more than anyone.
Not only nature, it's a natural thing. He didn't have. Moshe went to Hashem for everything.
Right.
He naturally. Right. Is asking to know naturally
right.
The difference between right and wrong.
Right, right.
Like the word Navon is being not life, but right. Yeah. You talk about one with the Dayatera.
Right. So it's like almost some type of
intuition.
Yeah, an intuition. That's right. A good word. Like to be able to just know straight what it is. I can't even I don't know why I'm saying what I'm saying, but
right.
It's like going with your gut almost type of thing. So the Radak then says, that's one interpretation. Opirusha lohi lafanav b'malach means that as far as any other king is concerned, no king is going to be as great as you. But Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, Moshe is compared as to a king. Certain people call him as a king, but he's not really a melech as we understand him. So certainly he's not like Moshe Rabbeinu, but he's going to be the greatest king. Will ever be a king greater than him in wisdom. Yeah.
I don't know. You said that there will never be a king greater than him in wisdom. Is that what you just
said? The Radak says that there will not be. Lo hay lefanav b'malachim. That he will be the greatest as far as kings are concerned.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean there may be some guy in Harvard or whatever. Maybe he's smarter than Shlomo.
But
Rabak has a different take on that, right?
What?
The Rabak says differently.
Where does it say that?
Secure to the generations before and after.
Right. Immediately, so the generation right before, generation right after. Okay. That doesn't sound literal from the sentence. It sounds like never. There has never been anyone like you before, nor will anyone like you ever arise. So the Rabban is kind of like deriving that it's not referring to forever, but that's what it sounds like in the sentence. The simple reading.
That's such a nice blessing. I mean, you want the children should.
Right, that's true also.
Well, then
that's
you have
true
to
also.
Be perfect.
What?
Then you have to be perfect.
What?
Then you have to be perfect if you want your children to be. And he, you know, he has to be perfect.
No.
But his children are not.
But that means only one thing. It reflects in a reflection of himself.
But maybe it also means that there will be another king like him. It doesn't mean that there will be any person, you know.
Right.
Smarter than him, the guys.
Right, and that's another way of reading the Radak. He may not have been the smartest person to ever exist. Pasuk Yud Gimel. V'gam asher sha'alta, v'gam asher lo sha'alta. Even the things he didn't even ask for. Nesata, I'm going to give you that too. Gam oisher, gam kavod, I'll give you wealth, I'll give you honor. Asher lo hoya kamoicha ish b'malachim kol yameyach. You see here, this sounds very clear from the Radak, the second interpretation. It says there'll be no one like you as far as kings are concerned. Kol yameacha, all of your days. V'im telech bidrochai l'shmor chukam mitzvosai, if you adhere to my commandments, kasher holach David avicha, as your father did, v'rachti es yameacha, then you also have arichas yom, you'll also have a length of days. And the Rashi makes the point that when it comes to wealth and honor, there's no condition attached to it. Those things will be given to him regardless. However, the pasuk here says when it comes to richa shamim, a long life, that's only if you adhere to God's commandments. Okay, so that's the second of the three parts of this parak. And then the last part of this parak, which perhaps is the most famous, which is also, as you can see, is the Haftorah from Miketz. We'll discuss the showing the wisdom that Shlomo actually has, that he's able to apply the knowledge that he was given, this intuition, and actually apply it to a real case. And we're all familiar with this case. And it's interesting, as we'll see, the Haftorah is Miketz. Miketz is the parsha which talks about Yosef, who also was, he wasn't a shepherd at the time, he was in jail, right? But he became the viceroy. So this is the Haftorah that's read about that parsha where Yosef ascends to the throne, the position of tremendous power of being a great king, and giving the advice to Paro about the seven good years, the seven bad years. Perhaps we'll see a connection as we go through the story. V'yikad Shlomo. So Shlomo wakes up. V'hini chalom. He realized it was a dream. V'yavo Yerushalayim. V'yamun lefnei Aaron bris Hashem. Ve'yal olos v'yas shlomim v'yas mishdil chalav adam. So he went to Yerushalayim. He went in front of the Aaron, and he brought offerings, elevation offerings, and he brought peace offerings, and he made a huge party, a mishdah, l'chalav adam, for all of his servants. So Rashi points out over here in Pasuk Tes Vav that when it says that he woke up and it was a dream, v'hinei maven. In that same language again, haven shechalomo emes. What do you mean he had a dream? But he realized that the dream that he had was true. What was the great thing that he was? How did he know it was true? How did he know he was so smart right when he woke up in the morning and he heard the birds chirping and the neighbor's dog barking? How did he know that he was so smart? So Rashi tells us, shemet oif, when you heard this bird, Mitzavsef, that was like making this noise, and chirping and moving. Maven Lashono, he said, ah, I know what that bird is saying. I know what's on this bird's mind. He saw a dog, right? He saw Caleb. Noibach was barking. Maven Lashono, he said, ah, I know exactly what that dog is saying. I know what that dog wants. Probably was hungry. So anyway, that's what Rashi says. And V'yas Mishteh says, Rashi, why did he throw a party? Misimchas libo shehaven shechlomo emes. He was so happy in his heart because he knew that the dream that he had, the gift that God said he would be granted, in fact, was given. Vilkin the Radak, which I also underlined over here in Pasuk Tes Vav, almost echoes the words of Rashi. He says, Kishir ha-chalom, when he knew that the dream, Shakitz Musameh, he woke up and he was happy. But Matana Tova Shnasana Akel, that Hashem gave him this wonderful gift of knowledge, of wisdom. Uvoil Yushlaim, with Yushlaim, the whole Olos, the Shlomim, with Ne'aron, Pris Hashem, which is what the Pasuk says, that he brought offerings. Yos Mishdil Chobadav, he had a party. And then he quotes the Kehilas Rabbah. The Medrash says, Vihini Chalom, it was a dream, says the Radak, when he woke up, Rosh Niskayim Chalomo, he saw the dream came true. Shenaslo Akel Chochma Yisera. He was given this tremendous amount of knowledge. Shahaya Shamir Oif, Mitzavseh Mimavin Lashono, which again is, doesn't mention the dog thing, but he had the ability to understand everything around the world. And therefore, based on the way the Radak said it before, is very beautiful. Comparing Moshe to Shlomo, Moshe's greatness was Chachmas Elokus, divine wisdom. Shlomo, the Radak calls it Chachmas HaTeva, and it's the wisdom of the natural world, nature. So he had the ability to connect and tap into nature in a way that no one else was able to do so. So he, the fact that he saw a dog, or he saw or heard the suffering of an animal, so he was sensitive to that pain. He realized what was going on. He understood everything around him in nature. And therefore, because he had this connection to the physical world, he was able to respond to anything very naturally. And that's what happens over here. At least we'll see the beginning of the story. Pasuk says, Zayin. Oz tavoyna shtayim nashim zonos el hamelach. All of a sudden, magically, two women appear to the king. Vatamon lefanam, they stand before him. Some people say that these may not have actually been women. It could have been some type of like angels of some sort that wanted to emphasize the knowledge that Shlomo had. And because otherwise, well, they just showed up magically at his door. It could be because he was always confronted with questions.
Right?
What?
Two meanings of that word somewhere else. As we
learned
from Raphael.
Well, Rachav. Right. So it could also mean, right, more of a negative connotation. Anyway, so these two women approach, and based on the question, perhaps calling them a lowly name makes sense because of what is being suggested by one of the women is really very inappropriate, which is like taking a child and pretending it's your child and trying to take away someone else's kid. It's a terrible, terrible thing. So that's what Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk Zayin, v'taymer isho achas. So one of the women speak up, Be Adoni, my master, Aniba Isha Zos, Yoshua Bayas Echad, we're all in the same house, we're all in the same, she was a roommate of mine in the hospital, Ve'eled Ima Babayas, and we both gave birth in this house, Vahibi Omashlishi, it was the third day, Liti, after I gave birth, Vatelid Gama Isha Zos, she gave birth, Vanachnu Yachtov, in Zar Itanu Babayas, there's no one there. Zulasi shtayim anachnu babayis. So there's no husbands involved, which again, perhaps that's why they're called the zona. There was just the two of them and their babies, and therefore there was no cameras, there was no DNA, there was no witnesses. Vayomos ben ha'isha hazos laila. Tragically, one of the children died. One of these infants. Asher shachba alav, and it was Asher Shachlov, because she lay upon him. So that she was maybe nursing, she fell asleep, and she rolled over and tragically killed the child. Perhaps it could have been SIDS or whatnot. And the reason why this is brought down, as the Radak, as well as others say, is that if the child was sick, therefore maybe there would have been discoloration, the child would have been very... It would be discernible that this child was not feeling well. There would have been doctors to care for the child. Clearly, both children were healthy children, and it was a tragic death. And therefore, that's why this all happened so fast. But talking to Seichel Laila, in the middle of the night, this must have happened. She got up. Tikach is Bini, Etzli. I had my beautiful, healthy child next to me. Ve'amoschli Yeshena, and your maidservant was sleeping. Batish. But Vatishkivehu Bechekon, she rested it upon her, next to her. And she took her dead child and put it by me. So I had a healthy child. In the middle of the night, she went and took my child out of the crib and put her child that just tragically died in the crib. So, obviously, she's trying to pretend that it was my child that died. But all kumba boker, I got up in the morning, I'm a good mom, I want to nurse my child. Vini meis, and behold, I saw my child dead. There's boyne in love, and I was looking into this matter. But boyker in the morning, vihini lo haye bni ashayulati. I said, hey, it's not my kid. It's not my child. Well, what's going on over here? Pasuk habeis. Vatimer isha hacheres. The other woman said, no. I'm letting you speak too much. Lo, no way. Loki, it's not what happened. Bni achai. My child is the one that's alive. The child over there, which is dead, that's your child. Loki, and the other one said, no, the other way around. I'm the one who has a living child. And he said all this in front of the king. So, this king who had such tremendous chachmah, the greatest wisdom imaginable, you would imagine he would come up with the most brilliant sentence. So what is the first sentence that comes out of his mouth? Pasuk of Gimel. V'yirma Melech. So the king says, Zosamaris, this woman says, Zeb B'nei, that she is the woman of this living child, B'nei Chmeis, and her friend is the one who has the dead child. Zosamaris, Loki, and the other one says, no, rather B'nei Chmeis or B'nei Chai, that I'm the one who has the living child, and you're the one who has the child who died. So that wasn't such a brilliant statement. Obviously, that's what they just said. So if you look in the Radak over here, Pasuk of Gimel, close to Yerushalmi and Sanhedrin, Omer Rabbi Seinu Zal, our rabbis teach us, Mikan Shesarach Hadayin L'shanos Ta'aynos Bali Hadin, that after the two people come and share their claims, it's necessary for the judge to repeat everything that they heard, maybe in a bridge form, K'Shiyishmu Bali Hariv, so that the people who are quarreling should hear it, Shehaven Tanoseihem Alim Yishmu, so that it'll be clear that that's exactly what they said. So this, what Shlomo is doing is he's teaching us how to be an effective judge. And a judge must say over what was heard, because otherwise, maybe when they would repeat it, one of the litigants would say, no, that's not what I said, that's not what I meant. So the fact is he has to say it exactly so that the two people will be like, oh, that's exactly right. V'yirma Melech. So the king said, Kehuli Charev, V'yaviu Hacher L'fnei Melech. I have a great idea. I have a very sharp sword. Could you please bring it to me? So they brought it to him. But Yomer HaMelech, Gizro Zuyel L'chai, L'shnayim. Let's take this child, and let's split that little kid into half. It's new. It's a chatzi, achas, it's a chatzi, lecha. So a brilliant man. I'm sure that's what both mothers would love, you know? So you split it down the middle, right? 50-50, compromise, sharing. So you take the kid, and you split the kid right down the middle. Petermar Isha, so the woman who actually was her child had such compassion, she said, to the king, give her the child, the living one, don't kill him, because it was her child. She had this natural compassion. And the other woman said, would she say the same thing? No, she said, Gamli Gamloch Lo ye gezoro. Says, for you, no, for me, no. Okay, sounds like a great idea. Chop the kid in half. So that was what she recommended. Which, of course, is a little bit of a strange thing for it to have said, but as it's brought down in the Mesudas David, as well as in the English, if you look on the page 37, the Mesudas suggests that the liar's primary motive, and this is sad because how close are we possibly to this sometimes, was to deprive her companion of the joy of motherhood, which the liar had lost by accidentally suffocating her baby. Now that Solomon had ordered that the baby be killed, she could have her way without going through the trouble of raising someone else's child. So it's one thing that I don't have something, but I don't want you to have it either. I feel happier if you also don't have. This is unfortunately a very sad thing. So on this, this is what was decided. And Pasach of Zion, Beyan HaMelech, the king said, Mayomer Tenuas HaYelud HaChai Mames Melosim Yisu, don't kill the child, he imo. The one who said that the child should live, that is the true mother. That is the one that is genuine over here. And therefore, he ended up giving this mother, the rightful mother, the child. Pasuk of Ches, V'yishmu Kol Yisrael. The people were so impressed by all this. And by the way, Rashi tells us had an, maybe it was a whole ruse. So Rashi says, "Udbaskol hayfi of Amra hiima." Wasn't just him, but there was a heavenly voice that agreed that this was correct. Pasuk Chavchai says, "V'yishmu kol Yisrael as a mishmar es sheshavat amelach v'yiru lifnei amelach v'mei amelach." So they heard that which the king had decided, and they feared him because they understood how smart he was. That he had the capacity to be able to do judgment and justice properly.
I've read it many times. I just realized.
Yeah.
He says to give the mother, the real mother, both babies.
Both halves. Give half and half.
Half
and half.
Once it's cut, if he cuts it.
But we know that the...
But he didn't cut it.
Half and half.
No. This is Mula Elkayelut Chai Behamet.
Which pasuk are you on?
Chav Zayin.
No, it's
this. Do not allow this child to be killed. Do not kill this child. Right?
Right.
Do not kill this child.
Do not kill this child.
Do not put
her
to death. She is his mother, not to give her the dead child.
So that's...
Oh, the Hamet.
So some people interpret it means, didn't mean really to split down the middle, but perhaps kind of like as a partnership, maybe you'll have the child a few days, and you'll have the child for a few days, you'll split. Do not kill this child. Do not allow this child death. Death should not occur to this child.
Yeah. Okay.
So again, it doesn't necessarily mean split down the middle, like killing the child.
It means
maybe you take the child for a few days. You take the child for a few days, and the mother says, "You know what? That may not be a healthy thing to do." Just discusses the whole thing about having a child here for a couple of days, there a couple of days. That may not be the healthiest thing for a child. Split the child literally down the middle like a knife. And I'll conclude with the following joke, and we'll stop here after this. There was two mother-in-laws that went to the king. You know this one, right?
No, but I can imagine where you're going.
And one said, "This boy is my son-in-law." And the other one said, "No, this one's my son-in-law." So the king said, "You know what? Take a sword and cut the son-in-law in half." So one of them said, no, don't do that. Absolutely not. Don't harm this child. He's such a good boy." And the other one said, "No problem. You should split the kid down the middle." And the king said, "The one who said,
that's the real mother-in-law.